to Constructive Criticism. I am your guest host, Mason, and I am joined today by Legacy Challenge Top 8 competitor, Mutagenic Growther Extraordinaire, Matt Klang.
Hey, how's it going?
And joined by his friend, Michael Hinderacher.
Oh, man. You moved so far down on the list.
I'm riding some coattails here. You know, frankly, Mutagenic Growth in Grixis Delver was one of the greatest innovations of all time, but now the deck is dead, so...
I know, it's sad that it had to come so late in the deck's lifetime.
So, it's good news, bad news, right? It came so late in the deck's lifetime, but you also cannot disprove that it was the greatest innovation ever in Grixis Delver.
That's true.
Yeah, I was under the assumption that was why it got banned. Was that not the case?
Yeah, it was actually fine up until this weekend, and then they saw the Mutagenic Growth, and were like, we're done with this.
Yeah, and that's why they hit Get Probe too. Yeah. They're like, 5 Phyrexian spells is too many. 4, that's the sweet spot. They can just play 4 growths, look how good it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep. It was really the 5th Phyrexian spell causing a lot of problems, and saving Deathrite Shaman from Lightning Bolt just seemed entirely too broken, so here we are.
I agree. Well, if you want to build a new Legacy deck, you can check out our sponsor, Oasis Games. Oasis Games has all the cards you're going to need to build your Death and Taxes deck. Don't worry about all those expensive cards going. Just buy 11 planes, play it. Death and Taxes is great. You can check out Oasis Games and use the code WOULDTHATBEGOOD to get a discount on your checkout. And you can also use the code CCMTG if it's your first time for 15% off. You can also check out our other sponsor, The Mana Base. They sell skilled product. That's not something Oasis Games does. So if you're trying to get on that M19 limited, maybe got a local PPDQ, not like the PT, they don't have it this time. But a local PBDQ, you can get the edge since no one's drafting. Getting that extra game will probably help out a whole lot. So you can go get the limited product there. That's something you can get from Oasis Games. But if you want to support us directly, you can check out patreon.com/CCMTG. Not going to lie, I forgot what our Patreon was, and it's literally just CCMTG. So that was a little embarrassing, but we're moving on. It's fine.
That was the plan, though, right? I mean, the plan was that, like, if any of us forget, you just guess, and it's probably fine.
Oh, yeah, totally. I just was like, what's the name of this? Oh, yeah, Constructive Criticism. There you go.
Well, I appreciate that as a strategy. We're really trying to make things foolproof because we have a lot of fools around here.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main plan. And with the Patreon, you can go over there and support us directly. It means a whole lot. The show will always be free, but if you felt like the show's given a little bit more to you and you want to give a little bit more back, it's always appreciated. We're pretty close to the next goal, which is the Pro Tour exclusive episode. I actually haven't checked. It always fluctuates at the beginning of the month because sometimes people lapse and sometimes payments haven't gone through yet. So I'm not sure how close we are to it right now, but I know before we were on track. So hopefully we'll have it, and if not by the next PT, the one after that. The first one, I guess, would be Guilds of Ravnica. I don't know. I failed to qualify for this the weekend.
Whatever the fall set is.
Yep. Womp, womp. All right. Well, I think it's Guilds of Ravnica. Now that's bothering me. I'm going to look this up while we go into
it's it's something of Ravnica, yeah. I think it's Guilds of Ravnica.
I think Magic Online still is referring to it as Pro Tour Spaghetti, which...
Well, that's why it was weird to me, because I saw that on the online event schedule, and I was like, is this for, like, another Pro Tour that's, like, way in the distance?
So, my understanding is that the Magic Online event schedule just, like, never gets updated and is frequently incorrect.
Sure.
So, kind of take it with a grain of salt.
All right. Well, let's move on to hashtag always improving. Hashtag improving is the point of the show. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Matt, how did you always improve this week?
Well, I top aided a Legacy Challenge with Mutagenic Growth in my deck.
Ayo! So,
and I wasn't playing Glistener Elf.
Yeah, you were playing Grixis Delver, right?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, so how'd you get to that point to put Mutagenic Growth in your deck? How's that an improving moment, besides obviously getting that deck banned and ruining a bunch of people's investment?
Well, that was most of it. So the way that I got to the Mutagenic Growth was Michael and I were playing a league online via Skype, and we were playing Checkpile and cast a Toxic Deluge for 1 to kill our opponent's True Name Nemesis. And I was like, man, what a blowout it would be if my opponent had Mutagenic Growth right now. And then Michael's like, oh, you know, it also saves Deathrite Shaman from Lightning Bolt. And I was like, well, maybe we should just be doing this. And while I never got to do either one of those sweet things, I did get to kill my opponent's Unflipped Delver with my Unflipped Delver twice in the same match.
Jeez.
And at least one game, it basically won you single-handedly by going around like the second, third, and fourth, and fifth, and sixth Mutagenic Growths.
Right, yeah, he just decided he couldn't attack or block anymore because he got blown out by it so hard.
Jeez.
It was really nice.
That sounds really nice. Man, I still can't believe you guys got the deck banned. That's pretty impressive. That's an accomplishment. That might be how I enter you from now on when I'm doing it. But, Michael, how did you always improve this week?
I played a lot of Magic. I played a paper tournament. I played a number of leagues online. I played an online PTQ, and I played an online limited preliminary. So I played just a bunch of Magic this week.
Jeez.
In a week where it looked like I might not have a whole lot going on Magic-wise.
There you go. That's pretty good. Well, my hashtag always improving this moment this week was I played the online PTQ. I went 7-2, so I lost out in like the last two rounds to have the win in. And I was, I guess it'd be 6-1. And then I lost to Jeskai somehow playing Tron. And then the next round I paired against Storm and beat them 2-0. And I was like, that's not what's supposed to happen.
That's a bummer. I saw that you finished in 23rd. That was a solid finish.
Yeah, it was good. It's the best finish I've had on Magic Online PTQ, which I haven't played too many of. I think I've played like 4 or 5, but still. But the crazy part of this was, though, is that like I was supposed to meet up some friends who are in town for the 4th. So I like lose the first round to Death Shadow. I beat Death Shadow the second round. I'm like, well, I'm supposed to meet up with my friends. So I drove across town to get to them, and then I played the Magic Online event there. And then I had to drive all the way back to make it in time to play the next round, like later on in the day, like 4 rounds later. So I'm upset that I didn't make top 8, and I'm like happy with my result and whatnot, but I'm really upset because if I had won the PTQ, that would have been the best story ever. Like, I had to have been the only person to win a Magic Online PTQ who drove like 2 hours total during the day. I don't know.
Sure, the person who, you know, was kind of like, if I miss it, I miss it.
Yeah, exactly. I did miss like a lot of time in one round, where apparently at some point I did an action and then forgot about it, and I came back and there was 12 minutes on the clock and I hadn't finished mulliganing for game one. And then I played against Mardu Pyra, and I just beat him in, like, literally 5 minutes on my clock. Like, it was minutes there. I was like, oh.
But, aggressive.
Yeah, well.
That's just rude.
Listen.
Just make your opponent wait for, like, 20 minutes. Man.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't mean to. I told them sorry. Sorry I got distracted, but, like, you know.
Yeah, but he also knew you didn't have a soul once you played your first Tron land, so your apology was actually void.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But, I mean, he knows he can play Karn in the format, right? Like, that's what I always think when my opponents play Mardu Pyromancer since I started playing Tron. I'm like, you know you can do this, right? So, I don't know. Michael, I would never catch you playing Mardu Pyromancer, right?
Oh, I played Mardu Pyromancer all weekend. I played it in a league and went 5-0-10-0, and then I played in a paper event and went 6-0-12-0.
Jeez.
So then I had to play it in the PTQ. So, it did not go as well in the PTQ, but you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
You wasted all your run goods, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I 2-3 the league with Tron the night before, and I was like, all right, sleeving it up.
Yeah, see, Mason knows how to do it.
Yeah.
You should, if you'd 0-5, you'd have top 8'd.
I know, right? I just committed, I'm 0-3, I'm like, well, gotta make sure to use them all now. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, let's move on to the training grounds this week. I'm sorry, to card of the week this week. Sorry about that. We are going to be doing a pretty interesting training grounds. We have a very interesting card of the week, and this week's card of the week is Sifter Worm. So, Michael, why is Sifter Worm our card of the week?
Yes, Michael, enlighten us.
Sifter Worm is our card of the week because people hate themselves.
Wow, that's really hurtful for what I know is going to happen later in the show. I'm feeling targeted. All right. No, I mean...
Legitimately, though, someone did pretty well at U.S. Nationals with a deck basically built around Sifter Worm and a bunch of... A bunch of aftermath cards of varying quality. Some of them were good, some of them not so much. But I think the main idea was that, you know, if Sifter Worm was often reading, you gain like 8, 9, or 10 life, it was pretty potent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he played it as the only creature in his main deck.
Correct.
And was just using it like to find utility spells and stay alive.
Yeah, that was
It was kind of a cool deck.
What was he using to win the game?
Aftermath cards. Sifter Worm, Hour of Promise, that's it.
Really?
No, they had Cut Ribbons.
Cut to Ribbons.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure, okay.
And they had, Heaven Doesn't Hit Them. That's right. Never mind, sorry.
No, it was interesting. It didn't look like a deck that could win games, but it very clearly could. So, you know, congratulations to him on a solid finish, and congratulations to Sifter Worm on seeing play at least once.
Yeah, I think Sifter Worm's sweet. It was like a bomb in limited, right? Like, that's normally a sign,
card,
right?
To be fair, yes.
Yeah.
That card was a bomb in limited.
Yeah. So my question about Sifter Worm is, how much better is it than Palakka Worm if you scry 2 bad cards to the bottom and gain, like, 5 life? Like, let's say you scry, like, 2 lands and reveal Hour Promise. Is that better than Palakka Worm?
Yeah.
It's probably better than Palakka Worm almost all the time. Like, the scry is actually probably a lot better than the life gain.
Okay. That's what Well,
and it's hard to say the scry is better than the life gain. I mean, you already have 7 mana, so, like, if something costs 7, you're going to probably top it, right? Like, I think you're often... The secret is that drawing 3 lands is probably always going to lose you a game, 7 life or no, right? Like, if you scry all 3 lands to the bottom and then hit another land, that's the only way you're not, like, gaining a pretty substantial chunk of life with Sifter Worm. And if that was the case, the chance of a Palaka Worm winning you the game seem extremely low anyways.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Palaka Worm does get to draw a card when it leaves play, so it's not nothing.
When it dies.
Only when it dies, I believe.
Yeah.
It's right, just, yeah. Sure, I shouldn't say leaves play because there's no, like, blank shenanigans or anything like that with the draw card ability. But
yeah. And with Wrathless Contempt in the format, it's very real, so...
Right.
It's interesting. Well, I'm excited about this card. I think there's going to be a lot of sweet worm decks. You know, Tremors is a favorite movie of mine. Maybe we'll get there later in the night when we break the format for you all in exclusive. You don't even have to be a patron. We're going to give you the best deck in the format later tonight. How great. But no, that's going to be the card of the week. So a little bit of announcement. We, and this is my fault. I shouldn't say we. I lost who won card of the week earlier in like a month ago when we did it. That's on me. Spencer was moving. I was supposed to be in charge of it. And I like picked someone. I said it. And now we're not sure who it was. So if you won card of the week last time with the Teferis and whatnot, you should message Spencer Hallin at Spencer13H on Twitter or on Facebook. Or you should message at Mason E. Clark on Twitter or on Facebook. So there you go. All right. That's all there is for that part of the show. Let's move on to our training ground, Sam. So Spencer has this pretty cool idea. And by the way, Spencer, if you're wondering, he is not feeling so well tonight. So he is sitting out. And I'm taking over for him. Spencer has this sweet idea, though, that for when there's times like this between the sets going to drop and there's not many shows we can really talk about, we can do a brew episode leading up to the set being released. So Spencer had himself, Matt, Michael, and I all build decks, and we're going to talk about them on the show, and that's going to be the training grounds this week. So let's start off with Spencer's deck, and I guess I'll read it since Spencer is not here tonight, and I'm taking over his role. Oh my, Michael, can you sit up a little bit, by the way? Thank you. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. I can also read this deck.
Yeah, you want to read this deck for me while I'm trying to pull
it up? 2 Nicol Bolas Ravager, all right. 2 Glorybringer, 2 Varix Bladewing, 4 Elvish Rejuvenator, 1 Shefet Monitor, 3 Walking Ballista, 3 Shivan Fire, 1 Abrade, 1 Nicol Bolas God Pharaoh, 1 Vraska Relic Seeker, 1 Nissa Steward of Elements, 4 Hour of Promise, 4 Grow from the Ashes, 2 Spring Mind, 2 Sweltering Suns, and 1 Cut Ribbons. And the mana base is 2 Ifnir Deadlands, 2 Hashep Oasis, 1 Scavenger Grounds, 1 Desert of the Fervent, 1 Desert of the Indomitable, 1 Ipnu Rivulet, 1 Island, 1 Swamp, 3 Forest, 4 Blooming Marsh, 3 Rootbound Crag, 2 Shelter Thicket, 1 Botanical Sanctum, and 1 Canyon Slough. The sideboard is 2 Arborback Stomper, 2 Glorybringer, 2 Struggle to Survive, 2 Vivian Reed, 3 Duress, 2 Doomfall, and 2 Hour of Devastation.
All right. So, let's start off with what we like about this deck. What's something you like about this deck, Matt?
I like Nicol Bolas, the 37 mana. Or, sorry, Nicol Bolas, the Ravager.
Okay. I like you're going to get the joke to stick. Yeah, that card's good. It does seem like you're going to flip your Nicol Bolas, like, on turn 6, like, maybe even turn... I guess not turn 5 because you have to play it, but turn 6 pretty consistently.
Right, and the other thing I like about this deck is that it has what Spencer would refer to as bridge spells, and that you have spells that you can cast in the mid game if you're not necessarily like, you know, between ramp spells or whatever. Like Nicol Bolas has a 4 mana mode, Varix Bladewing has a 4 mana mode as well. You have Walking Ballista, which has a lot of modes. You have Shivan Fire, which has 2 different modes. So you're able to do things with your mana even if you don't have, you know, even if you don't have 20 mana in play. Mm-hmm. And with a lot of these spells having kicker, even Nicol Bolas has kicker in a sense, right? It really gives you a lot to do with your mana in the late game.
Okay, yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, I like how, I was going to say that too, where it does that thing where it doesn't have to have ramp spells for like most of the cards. Like you really want it with the Varix Dragon, but I mean like a 4 mana 4/4 is something you can play, right? Like it's not the worst thing ever. And I think it does a good job of not being too reliant on ramp spells, if that makes sense. Like it's not a deck that's gonna fold if you don't draw like 2 ramp spells. Well, there are some ramp decks where that is the case.
Yeah. I would like to see more cycle lands too, if we could possibly include that, because I think that's another way that you can get a lot of value out of like whether you do or don't have the ramp spells. Like if you already have all your mana in play, it's nice to be able to cycle away the lands, whereas if you're, you know, trying to hit land drops, they obviously work for that as well.
Mm-hmm. I was going to mention the mana base. I think with this and another deck we're going to talk about later, it's going to be really hard on first glances to get the mana base right, and that's probably going to be one of the more important things with this deck, because you can play so many different utility lands thanks to Hour of Promise. Is Memorial of Folly the one that buys back a creature, a card that's interesting to you guys in this kind of deck?
Yeah, I think it's definitely pretty powerful. I think the biggest question is just, like, how many tap lands can you really play? How many of them need to cycle, and how many of them need to be deserts? And that's the kind of stuff that's really hard to just come up with off the top of your head, but mm-hmm. I think would become pretty clear after a number of games. Like, we're already playing two tap deserts, a canyon slough, two sheltered thickets, plus five fast lands. So you're going to have kind of a lot of tap lands already in the mid to late game. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what the cost is. The thing that I like the best about this deck is that Hour of Promise does a really nice job of ramping you into the, like, big effects of all your rampable spells. Like, it ramps you straight into Nicol Bolas, Vraska, a big Nissa, like, flips Nicol Bolas, kicks Varric's Bladewing. But it also just provides you with threats. And I think that, like, being able to get, you know, some combination of Ifnir Deadlands, Hashep Oasis, and Scavenger Grounds, as well as creating a couple of zombies, is just a reasonable effect, just pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Sorry about that. I was taking care of something on the back end here. So I want to look at the sideboard here for a second. What do you guys think about the card Arborback Stomper? I believe it's the name. It's the 5-mana 4/4 that gains life, 5 life when it enters the battlefield. It's a card that hasn't seen a whole lot of play, and it seems fairly interesting. Does this seem like a card you would want against red decks? I just haven't.
It's a 5/4, right? It's a 5/4.
Oh, is it?
5-mana 5/4. Yeah, it's 3 green 5/4. When it ETBs, you gain 5.
Oh, right. My mistake. But, yeah, so is this a card that seems interesting out there? Because it seems like the card that's the most out of place to me, because I'm not sure if it's actually good enough to stop red, but it's also one of those things where it's a card probably worth looking at, right, in this kind of deck.
Well, I think it might be good in this deck. I think a lot of the reasons we haven't seen it is because there are no ramp decks. Mm-hmm. And second of all, most of the individualized metagame is going to be targeting red-black rather than mono-red.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we just had the RPTQ, the last round of them anyway, where a lot more was targeting towards mono red. So, it would be more likely to play something like Arborback Stomper in that format. Whereas, like, I think an individual standard, it might be not as good because I don't think Arborback Stomper is necessarily what you want against red black. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You would want some of the more grindy cards against them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that as well. The card lines of Really versus Glorybringer specifically.
Yeah,
right.
And that's and they probably will bring not, that against you.
No, I mean they're playing a bunch of Glorybringers.
He's talking about out of the red black deck as opposed to the mono red deck.
Right.
Yeah.
I think in that matchup specifically, it's just less good. But that being said, I mean I think gaining life stapled to like a reasonable body is obviously a powerful effect. So
yeah, I agree. I just like the rest of the sideboard.
Like Stomper, look good or bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I just like the rest of the sideboard, so.
Reasonable.
Yeah, that was the only card that was like, alright, like the rest of these I can like clearly see why and I can clearly see like the applications. That was just the one. So it felt like the card to talk about. I also don't know another card I would play over it, so it might just be a necessary evil type thing for it right now. Unless you want to play Pulaka Worm. Nah, that's a lot of mana. Alright.
Or Sifter Worm.
Yeah, exactly. If you won card of the week, you could just play Sifter Worm because you can't find your Arborback Stompers. And then
you wouldn't have those. You didn't win those in a card of the week.
Not this week. Once next week. I guess we need 2 weeks. We need this deck to win the first SCG, and then we throw it back to right now. And then boom, we've got it. No, but jokes aside, I like the looks of this. I think this deck is a lot more reasonable than maybe the ramp deck I put on screen for later in the night. But yeah, I think this is cool. I wish Spencer was here and wasn't feeling sick right now to talk about his thoughts and position with this, because I know Spencer really loves ramp decks. He really loves working on ramp decks. And he normally has like a very clear vision in his mind for what he's trying to do with his decks. And sometimes it can be harder, especially like in a format you've never played before, which like is kind of what we're doing, to like see that and talk about it. So hope you feel better, Spencer. And maybe next week, you know, after this deck gets copied and win the SCG, we can have you talk about it. Be a good time. But Michael. No, I'm sorry. It's Matt's. Matt, your deck's up next. You want to talk about it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to read the deck list off, and I'm going to try to do it without the lands first. So mm-hmm. we have 4 Cogworker's Puzzle Knots, 2 Fatal Push, 1 Murder, 4 Herald of Anguish, 3 Karn Scion of Urza, 4 Metallic Rebuke, 4 Prophetic Prism, 4 Renegade Map, 2 Servo Schematic, 2 Tezzeret the Schemer, 3 Tezzeret Artifice Master, 4 of the Antiquities War, and 2 Walking Ballista in the main. The mana base is 4 Drowned Catacombs, 4 Fetid Pools, 2 Inventor Spares, 3 Islands, 4 Spire of Industry, 4 Swamp. And the sideboard is 2 Battle at the Bridge, 2 Cast Down, 2 Contraband Kingpin, 2 Golden Demise, 2 Negate, 2 Phyrexian Scriptures, 1 Chromium the Mutable, and 2 Liliana's Contract.
Awesome. So what was your head when you were building this deck?
So my head was, what is the best deck that I can build around Tezzeret Artifice Master? And the first thing that came to mind was with Thopters and the pseudo Metalcraft ability, the best thing that I can do is play an improvised deck. Like things like Cogworker's Puzzle Knot actually work really well with Tezzeret because they add 2 artifacts, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So that was mostly my thought here. I'm not sure, honestly, what the improvised decks were lacking before. Like, certainly they got a lot of things from this set that made them better against the control decks. Like, if you'll notice, all the cards that I added from M19 to this list are for the control matchup for the most part. Like, Tezzeret, Artifice Master, and then the sideboard, Chromium and Liliana's Contracts are all for control matchups. If that proves to not be where the deck was weak before, then it might be something I have to revisit and, you know, retool. But mm-hmm. I imagine with cheap 5/5s, it's probably got a reasonable aggro matchup. And, like, you know, like I said, Cogworker's Puzzle Knots and Servo Schematics and stuff kind of gum up the ground. Obviously, not great against Chain Whirler, but in general, they're pretty decent against Mono Red.
That's fair. Yeah. They do have to draw Chain Whirler. They, you know, that's the part that doesn't get talked about a whole lot.
You have 4 Metallic Rebukes as well, right? Like, it's not like you're just stone cold to a Chain Whirler every time. And those are the only cards in the deck that actually die to it, as it were. And mm-hmm. it's probably not the end of the world if one of those Thopters dies, honestly.
Yeah, this deck's really interesting to me because it seems like the blue-black improvised deck, once Karn came out, was like close to maybe being a thing. And they did get a lot of cards, like you talked about, and maybe it was the control matchup was a problem, right? They couldn't beat like the blue-white decks that just were overpowering them with Teferi. And now they have Tezzeret, the 5-drop, and then the Liliana's Contract as a way to push through, along with Chromium. Michael, right. Is this a deck that you're interested in? Like,
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think I might like to see more Battle at the Bridges in the sideboard, at least for the time being. I think just being able to...
Just exile a Hazret, or kill a Hazret.
Kill a Hazret is unsurprisingly great, but I like the Planeswalker mix we have going on, and I like how Herald of Anguish stacks up. I really like the card Herald of Anguish, and I think that, like, just in general, this deck was not that far from being pretty reasonable before.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, Karn is really powerful, and it goes really well with the new Tezzeret as well. Both allowing you to divination to be able to use Karn's minus a little more freely, or plusing to create more artifacts, so his minus is more powerful. I think like both of those modes are pretty nice.
I mean, it also protects your other Planeswalkers, too, right? Because, like, Tezzeret the Schemer doesn't actually have a way to protect itself other than minusing. So, like, if you're looking to plus your Planeswalkers, it's nice to have one that makes tokens as a, you know, as a plus.
Well, and it goes well with Tezzeret the Schemer for that reason, right? Like, if you plus Tezzeret the Schemer once, then play Tezzeret Artifice Master plus that, now you have at least 2 artifacts right off the bat that, like, allows you to maybe mow down a small creature or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think those all go pretty well together.
Yeah, and it works the other way too, right? Where, like, you play the Tezzeret and you had ticked up the turn before, and now you can minus for 3 on something, which is, you know, 4 is basically as big as things get right now, so you're pretty close to having that already. And I'd be surprised if you didn't have another artifact. I want to talk about the Antiquity.
In combination with Walking Ballista or something like that, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, Walking Ballista would just meet the requirement there, but the Antiquity Wars, that's the card I wanted to talk about here. How many artifacts do you need to, like, always hit with the Antiquities War? Is it similar to Gluttonous Crane Math? I know you see one more card, right?
It's a little bit better than Gluttonous Crane, right? Because it goes for 5 instead of 4. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's actually probably significant if you actually broke down the math. I'm pretty sure 5 is, like, actually quite a bit more than 4. But I don't know that you actually need to hit every time off of it to make that card good. That's not the mode I'm looking for most of the time. I mean,
gotcha.
It is nice, obviously, to be able to draw the artifacts, but it's, like I said, it's not the mode I'm looking for.
Gotcha. So you're
more...
about
13% to miss, but the flip side is that if you have a... If you play an artifact that turn, it's not really missing, right? Like, plusing either Tezzeret, you sort of are undoing a miss. Minusing Karn, you're undoing a miss. Like, there's... It's not really quite fair to say that you're truly missing if you're still generating more artifacts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So does the way it work is it makes them a creature with base power 5 and toughness 5, so Karn's token would get bigger? Is that how that works?
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay. That's how I think it works, but I'm not sure. I've never actually seen it in play.
That seems believable to me as well. I don't know for sure, though. I would have to look at the wording on... Antiquities Wars and Karn, honestly. I actually don't know what the wording is on the Karn tokens either. I assume they are...
There's zero zeros with the effect. So.
There's zero zeros with the effect, not star stars.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Okay. I can double check.
Here's the actual truth, though, right? Like, if your opponent is in a situation where blocking a Karn construct is not an option available to them, they're just... Right, like, that's the one getting blocked or killed, and if they can't do that and you have, like, any other artifacts, it's hard to imagine how it's not just 20.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine a lot of times Karn is just making 5/5s by himself, right? Like, they don't necessarily need 10/10s.
Yeah, if they do turn into a 10/10, right, it's like, well, that's the one that a creature gets under the bus in front of more than the other 5/5. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
I was just curious how that worked.
I personally never survived in an Antiquities Wars ultimate, if you will. So I assume that trend will continue.
Yeah. So you're really like, okay. Yeah, this deck's very interesting. The more we talk about it, the more excited I get for it. I got to ask, the one murder, suggest you felt like you needed some more removal? Is that
It's mostly just to try it out, honestly. I am not sure. So... I was going to play 3 Fatal Pushes, but then I thought I might want to actually kill, Glorybringers and things like that, so the murder just makes a lot of sense. I mean, you could play Cast Down, but I've actually found the non-legendary clause to be a problem some amount of the time, so, like, being able to kill Lyra and things like that is also nice.
Yeah, I can definitely
As well
see.
As just, like, carry Zev or PNLR or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. My biggest issue with this deck still, and this was an issue with every iteration of this deck, is just that none of the 2-mana artifacts make mana. Like, this is a deck that would benefit from probably Mindstone more than any other deck in the format by a substantial
amount. Well, so they did print Manalith in this new set, and I considered putting that in the deck. But it not being a 2-mana artifact just seemed like too rough.
Yeah, that's one we've had in the standard, though, for a while, and I never saw it playing the deck, right?
It's an Hour of Devastation.
Oh, was it also an Hour? Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You used it to play your Sifter Worms.
Okay.
I'm not joking. That's what you did. It's the one limited format I really, really like besides cons. I agree with Michael. And also, the only other thing I would say is, and it's kind of like something you talked about with ramp decks, right? Like, if your deck draws too much of one half, sometimes it can go kind of south. Luckily, this deck does have a lot of really good hits, though, right? Like, Wars, both Tezzeret and Karn are all cards you're trying to draw. And you have Inventor's Fair, which... like, gains you life, so that kind of buys you time.
Yeah, I mean, and Herald of Anguish is also a payoff card as well, right? Like, it definitely has a lot of payoff, in addition to, like, Prophetic Prisms being redraws, and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. If anything, I think we've actually somehow swung the deck towards too much payoff, which is so bizarre given the issues that this deck always had before.
Right.
Right, like, if anything, it's actually too many artifacts or too many.
Yeah, like, it seems like that would be my bigger concern, honestly, is that you don't have enough engine and too many payoffs.
Yep, draw too much of one half of the deck. Definitely can happen. Last thing I want to talk about, and then we can move on. Chromium, we didn't get to talk about it last week any on the top 20, and I kind of want to talk about you guys now. Is this a card you're interested in? Is it in the list because you think it's powerful, or just because you want to play with it?
I just kind of want to try it. Honestly, I worry about it a little bit because it doesn't have any kind of protection from Wraths, which is obviously an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it just does have Hexproof and is a 7/7 for 7 that can't be countered, I felt that it was at least worth trying.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's definitely an interesting one. I don't know how good it really ends up being in this deck, especially.
I mean, But well, my other thought is that they probably don't actually want to have Wraths against you, right? Like, that's just not a real... They're just not very good.
The ones aren't settled, right?
What?
Well, you would kind of want settle, right? Like, okay. It'd be fine.
Yeah, settle may be fine.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I would do if I was playing blue-white against this, and I imagine I'd lose some number.
It depends so much on, like, how many duress effects you might expect a deck like this to have in the boarded game. Because the hardest thing with settle is, like, it's really, really difficult to protect it against the Antiquities War if they're able to hold up, like, counterspells or duress you as it's happening. Like, I mean, it's sort of the same issue that blue-white has had with, like, red-black, right? That if you just have to have the Wrath or have to have settle on a specific turn and everyone knows you have to have it, it can be pretty challenging to actually get it to resolve.
Right.
Okay. That's definitely fair. All right. Well, let's move on to Michael's deck. Michael, do you want to read this deck for us?
Yeah. So the deck that I submitted was 4 Llanowar Elves, 4 Servant of the Conduit. I forget the full name. 4 Goreclaw.
Goreclaw, Terror of Quisismal.
Now I remember why I forgot it. 4 Glorybringer, 4 Rekindling Phoenix, 3 Galta, 4 Steelleaf Champion, 2 Ronus, 4 Adventurous Impulse, 2 Magma Spray, 2 Abraid, and the mana base was 4 Sheltered Thicket, 4 Brutebound Crag, 3 Aether Hub, 2 Mountain, and 10 Forest. The sideboard was 2 Abraid, 2 Magma Spray, 4 Chandra's Defeats, 3 Aether Sphere Harvesters, and 3 Warningsters.
All right, so Michael, what was going on in your head when you were building this deck?
Well, we're trying to build something that would allow you to live the dream, which is turn 3 Goreclaw off either a Servant or a Llanowar Elf into turn 4 Glorybringer Galta.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty strong turn 4.
Yeah, like, pretty much been obsessed with casting fast Galtas for a long time, and they never seem to be as good as I want them to be, but this deck really pushes in that direction, and it probably has actually a lot of ways to cast a turn 4 Galta.
Well, I mean, you can cast the turn 4 Galta with that sequence even without the Glorybringer, right? Like, the Glorybringer is actually just added value.
Oh, for sure.
Because, well, like, Glorybringer is actually, it's actually, well, no, maybe it's not. Maybe you actually do need the Glorybringer. Do you? So you'd have 4, so 4, 6, so Galta would cost 6 less, 8 less. So yeah, you could do it with a Servant, and with the Llanowar Elves. Yeah, either way, it actually works.
No, Galta would cost... No, you can cast it on turn 5 just... We talked about this before. You can cast it on turn 5 with just Goreclaw. Goreclaw on 4, Glorybringer, Galta, because you attack and then exert, and you get the trigger from the Goreclaw, which pumps your Glorybringer, so you have 10 power in play.
Oh, right, yeah, sure.
And then
sure.
You play the Galta for 2 post-combat, right. So...
But I'm saying with Llanowar Elves and Goreclaw, or Servant of the Conduit and Goreclaw, it still makes the Glorybringer, yes, the Galta cost 5 or less.
It has a lot of ways to cast fast Glorybringers, and it also has some chance to just, like, Ronus seemed kind of insane with Goreclaw, because Goreclaw both lets you cast it for 1, and it gives it trample.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you should be playing more Goreclaws, or more Ronuses.
I was gonna say, you got 4 Goreclaws, I wouldn't do any more.
Maybe you should play 6.
Yeah.
But you can do some really spicy things. I don't know that the Glorybringer, especially Rekindling Phoenix, feels maybe a little suspect, but and the mana base is probably a little suspect as well, but you can do some really powerful things with a combination of just, like, quick ramp.
That was certainly my first impression. My only gripe about this deck was that trying to play Rekindling Phoenix and Steelleaf Champion feels really ambitious, and the mana base doesn't look like it supports either. So...
No, I definitely support Steelleaf.
Yeah, you've got...
You have 21 green sources.
Yeah, it's probably
plus
fine.
Plus Llanowar Elves and Servant.
Right.
Yep. Now we're Kindling Phoenix.
The question is really more whether you support Magma Spray and Abraid and Phoenix.
Yeah, Magma Spray is another one that looked interesting, because that's a card that you generally want to have very early as well, right? Like, you don't, you're not really looking at top deck Magma Sprays most of the time.
No, but it can be a good double spell, too. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be on turn 1. It's more about just having their 1 mana spell to fit in here and there. Because I think Goreclaw specifically is going to create a lot of situations where you have excess mana floating around. That, sure. I mean, If you're
not actually using all your mana, then you're not getting the effect of the Goreclaw anyway, right? Like, if you're like, oh, well, I got to cast this Glorybringer for 3, but then I passed the turn with 2 mana open, so kind of didn't do anything.
Right. I think that realistically, you might try like mono green with like 4 blossoming defenses, because they'll still help you a lot with the Galta, but they'll also protect your Goreclaw. And then you could probably play a few more Ronuses, because I really think that either Ronus, Galta, and Glorybringer are the 3 that really look like they could be oppressive with Goreclaw to me.
Territory Allosaur card that's interesting with Goreclaw too?
Yeah, it probably is.
Are we doing too much with the red?
I mean, maybe you just don't need red at all. Maybe you could just cut the Glorybringers for Territorial Allosaurus. That would also allow you to go turn 3. If you can go turn 3 Goreclaw, I would let you go turn 4 Territorial Galta.
Yeah, easily. I mean, it's a 2-mana 5-5, right? That's.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that maybe, like, trying to emphasize... It's entirely possible that trying to emphasize the synergy with Ronus and, like, Territorial Allosaurus would just be better.
Mm-hmm. Because when you kick it, it would also cost 2 less, correct? That's how that works?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it would still only cost 5, and it would fight something.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. All right, so I don't think we talked about the sideboard of this version of the deck, did we? Did I miss that?
I don't think you read the sideboard.
No, didn't.
Do you want to read this?
I did read the sideboard.
Oh, you did read the sideboard.
2 Magma Sprays, 2 Abrades, 4 Chandra's Defeats, 4 Harvesters, and 3 Walking Ballistas. And really, it's just thrown together. I mean, it's so hard to project like what your matchups are going to look like or what even makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So Ballista, what was the thinking? Was it just like, I just need a card and this card's fine? Or because it's an interesting card to see in the sideboard.
I imagine when you're playing Harvesters, it goes pretty well with Harvester. And it can make your mana requirements less steep. Like in some of the more aggressive matchups, you might be able to just play more colorless cards in general to go with your red cards to take the tax off your Aether Hubs a little bit, as well as improving monsters.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of the thought process, but
sure. I mean, you can clearly tell that this was like pretty hastily thrown together, though, or like not necessarily hastily, but like that you don't have like a good idea of what you're trying to play against, because it's like 15 cards for mono red, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Naraka's like, I know one thing about M19, and that's
and, like,
Chain Whirler.
Bestiary, for instance, seems like a pretty easy include in a deck like this.
Insane. I was going to bring that card up, but yeah. I mean, yeah, it looks like Michael, you know, needed to get the deck together, and he didn't have a sideboard, so he just kind of gave us... He's like, it's
like,
fine.
Meaning Mason specifically was like, you have to submit a sideboard with your deck, so I was like, fine.
Yeah.
I doubt 15
cards. But it just honestly doesn't matter, right? Because like, we have no idea
what the deck is. Exactly. It's complete nonsense, and I'm willing to own that. I don't care about the sideboard at all.
Yeah.
I don't really even care about the main deck. I'm really just interested in like, what is the most degenerate thing you can do with Goreclaw? And I think that I'm mostly sold on some combination of maybe you just can't cast Glorybringer to the mana, but like Ronus and Territorial Allosaurus both seem insane.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I was going to say, I would probably try this with more green cards and less red cards. Like you could still maybe even play.
It seems like a really sweet idea for what it's worth, because you actually do kind of get the same thing as like an Exerted Glorybringer, right? If you have the Goreclaw. Like it's 5 mana for a 5 power creature, and then you kill something, presumably.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice
obviously,
curve.
You don't get the attack that turn, but.
Well, you don't get the attack that turn, but like, I think it's mostly overkill at some point. Like, if your opponent just can't interact with you, and you're like playing Territorial Allosaurus with Kicker and just eating their Glorybringer or whatever, like the game's going fine. You know, at a certain point, it's like we're running up the score just to run up the score.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like signing DeMarcus Cousins to the Warriors. You just don't need it.
You also get to play Kinra if you cut out some of these red cards, which is a card I like in these decks. Gives you a little bit more late game and helps you power out your Galtas.
Yeah. I don't know how good Kinra really is. I've always hated that card. But
oh, really?
You certainly could play it. Well, specifically, you probably have to be a little bit careful with it's just like the interaction with... maybe it's interaction with... Goreclaw is actually fine because it'll make another one of your creatures
a 4/4
have 4 power, which triggers the Goreclaw ability.
Yeah, I would think that you're going to be able to make Servant of the Conduit attack for 4 some amount of the time and be able to trigger like that. Right, it depends on what your creature suite looks like exactly, right? Because right now in the current list, the only creature that would get that benefit would be Servant of the Conduit, right? Because everything mm-hmm. else is either already 4 or more power, or Land of Worlds wouldn't get to 4.
Yeah.
Right.
I was also thinking it turns on Ruinous if it's by itself, but yeah. But also, the deck is, way different, too, right, with what we're talking
about.
I
do like the fact that it's a 2-mana 4-4, essentially, if you're trying to cast Galta, right? Like, it's really nice to have creatures that have higher power than mana cost, because that's how you wipe out Galta all in one turn.
Yeah. I think that, realistically, I would probably start with Mono Green with Blossoming Defense and presumably some number of Resilient Kenras as well. I think Blossoming Defense is the other card that just, this style of deck wants more than basically anything else. You could then try some combination of Nissa, Vivian, Reed, and Lifecrafter's Bestiary in the sideboard, and I think you'd have pretty good play in a lot of matchups. That sounds totally reasonable.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm excited for that.
Gore Clan with Galta and Ronas, both of those interactions just seem absurd.
Yep.
You're going to have all kinds of games where you are able to go Gore Clan and Gore Clan and Ronas in the same turn. And just that kind of cost reduction is really powerful. I think worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
definitely. All right, well, let's move on to the next deck. This is my deck. Let me pull up my list here, as I also put it up on screen. All right, here we go. I named my deck Tremors after the best movie ever made. All right, so we got 4 Sift of Worms, 3 Palaka Worms, 1 Struggle to Survive, 1 Consigned to Oblivion, 2 Cut to Ribbons, 4 Hour Devastation, 4 Hour Promise, 4 Spring to Mind, 2 Commit Memory, 3 Thematic Compass, 3 Gift of Paradise, 3 Chandra, Torch of Defiance. For lands, we have 1 Archer Resco, 1 Desert of the Fervent, 1 Desert of the Indomitable, 2 Field of Ruin, 4 Forest, 4 Hoshup Oasis, 1 Hinalan Harbor, 3 Ipnu Riverlet, 2 Island, 2 Mountain, 2 Rootbound Crag, Scavenger Ground, Spire Bluff Canal, and Swamp. And as for the sideboard, we have 2 Aether Meltdown, 3 Carnage Tyrant, 4 Negate, 1 Sandworm Convergence, because we need another Worm card, 2 Shivan Fire, 2 The Mirari's Conjecture, and 1 Vivian Reed. So that is my 75. Michael, I got to say, your suggestion to cut a worm, so I have 7 mana, 7 worms.
This is a mad suggestion. We were talking about this deck earlier today.
Oh, did you suggested that Michael just stole your thunder?
Yeah, I said that we should play 7 worms, so we call it 7 mana, 7 sevens for 7, or something like that. Just a bunch of sevens.
Man.
Yeah. The point was to basically make the name as difficult and confusing as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Mason titled his deck Mason Brew in a very underwhelming...
I named them all that. It should have been Tremors. I mean, 7 mana, 7, 7, the deck for 7, where you go 7-0, is a much better name. But...
where you go 7-0.
I mean, how could you lose? No, but... so when looking at this deck, right, obviously I saw the Sweet Deck from Nationals that took card of the week. For the most part, also just copied their mana base, because I had no real idea. Cut some of the cards that didn't seem as exciting, and instead threw Chandra's and Palaka Worms in. And I don't think it's the worst thing ever. Well, because
I appreciate the ambition of the old Chandra Hour of Devastation deck.
Yeah, it's just good deck building.
That's some belief.
Yeah, because I'm going to take up my Chandra so much. No, but seriously, Hour of Devastation, and Chandra, when I play Chandra, I think of it more like a removal spell in this deck that, kills something and then ramps me to the worm, or ramps me to, I guess, the worms, I should say. So that is one of the things when I was thinking about that card. And one of my normal problems with ramp decks is that they don't have enough powerful cards in them. So getting to play more Chandras is appealing to me, because it's late game, if I have all this mana and I draw a Chandra, it's a redraw that also can ping them and threatens to take over the game. So while it does nombo with my Hour of Devastation, my Hour of Devastation is really good in a matchup where Chandra isn't really good normally, right? So I don't think it's the end of the world there to have that happen. If I play a Chandra, it's mono red and minus. Yeah.
Here's my other question. How much of a nombo would you consider playing 7/7 drops along with Chandra be? It's not going to be plus to draw a card as often, right, if you're running a bunch of 7 drops?
That is true. So when you're curving out...
It does ramp them out.
Yeah.
It does ramp them out. Yeah, you can use 7. The plus for mana. That's obviously great. I don't disagree. But I wonder just how often you're actually going to be getting plus to draw a card with this. It's the strength of mono red is oftentimes you can plus reveal a card that costs 2 mana or whatever and still cast a 3 drop, right? And then that's pretty great. But in this deck, you're probably going to be plus, and maybe you have the 7 mana, maybe you don't, but so I just see a lot of times when you're not going to be able to cast both, you're not going to be able to use all your mana efficiently because of the fact that you're revealing spells that cost 7 mana.
So yeah, that is a problem for sure. Part of what I'm thinking though with this deck is we have so many ramp spells that it's pretty easy to play a ramp spell on three, then play a Chandra, use it to like minus to answer a creature or something. And then the next turn when you're taking up, you're normally going to have about seven mana. And I understand that sevens is a lot of seven drops in the deck, but it's like 1 in 10 basically, right?
Right.
And which you know, we talked about last week with the Rejuvenator, is a very real deal and something to be aware of, but it will cast like the rest of the spells in my deck. And like Michael said, the mana part is the part I'm even more interested in. I know I led with talking about how I'm going to draw cards, but that was more like thinking about in the later game, talking about how these decks can sometimes run out of gas. I do kind of expect it to be like a flame slash then ramps up if it lives. So
right. So one cool thing about Chandra in this deck is that because you have so many Aftermath cards, a lot of the time if it draws you one, it's actually going to end up drawing you a second card in a turn or two as well. Like, if you cast Spring to Mind off of Chandra, right, it got you a card now, but it also, like, stores another spell for later, which is kind of sweet.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, definitely. And then, so, we talked about this, I think, a little bit before the show went live. One of my other big concerns is it kind of has a hard time winning. Like, the only way the deck can really win is Siftworm, Palooka Worm, attacking, obviously. The zombies attacking from Hour of Promise or Chandra taking up. Oh, I guess I have Cut Ribbons. I forgot about that.
No, but you don't have two black sources.
Do I not have? I have Gift of Paradise.
There's only one black source in the deck. Oh, there's Gift of Paradise. Yeah.
I think there's two. I think there's two black sources and a Gift of Paradise.
I think there's only one swamp. No,
yeah,
other
you've only
land,
posted one black source. Black.
Three Gift of Paradises, but realistically, if I were going to play this, I think I would, you know.
Yeah, I would
probably fix that. But black none of this is really the point. Yeah. Like all of the decks are kind of nonsense in some ways, right? Like. Mm. We kind of threw them together to highlight cards we were interested in more than, like, you know, sleeve this exact list
up. Yeah, I'm not going to, like, sleeve this up for the Pro Tour yet. I got to put the two swamps in first. Then...
I mean, I'd have to qualify, so, you know, it's going to be hard.
There you go.
It's super hard to qualify for this Pro Tour right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amaz. but besides that,
we have to get a special invite.
Yep. There's four of them out there.
Or get invited by someone with a special invite.
Sure.
Yeah, I thought that's what we're talking about. Amaz.
Yeah, the trickle down special invite.
Yeah, that's very good.
They give Amaz the ability to invite any two people he wanted?
Yes.
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 Wow, that's so powerful.
They all did.
And Kibler and David Williams.
And Sifka.
As well as Sifka.
I didn't realize they all got Pro Tour invites as well as this invite to the.
That's how I know you're not on Twitter because you're not seeing Cedric tweet about it. Yeah, let's move on. But I want to talk about more of this deck because my deck's sweet and exciting, and we've also been going very quick, which I expected, but I still want to make sure we get at least an hour in. So the idea behind this deck was just to go bigger than everything. I have always thought Bansun was a deck that was close to being playable. This is kind of trying to do a different thing than that deck. That deck might just be better, but. Besides what we've already talked about, what do you guys hate about this deck? Because I know you guys love ramp decks, and you're not holding back at all.
I actually think Spencer's deck looked kind of sweet. I think, realistically, my biggest issue with this iteration versus Spencer's is that you have, like, no early plays.
Yep. The only early plays we have are the Compass.
You have a Consigned to Oblivion. That's not an early play. Thematic Compass is not an early play. It doesn't do anything. Ribbons, you have two Cuts Ribbons and one Consigned to Oblivion as things that can happen before turn three. Like, when you lose the die roll, I think you're frequently going to die having cast one spell.
Sure. It looks believable.
I can totally believe that. Yep. Yep. I thought that same thing. That's why I was mentioning earlier with Spencer's deck, where he's not so all in on making sure that the ramp spells. That's another problem where I think I have too much big stuff. You know, it's probably more realistic that we don't have all the worms.
If you figure that Varix is as good a 7-drop as any of these, but it's also a 4-drop, that's right.
Right,
like that's maybe something to look at.
Yeah, it's actually probably better than Palooka Worm in this deck.
Well, and Nicol Bolas is the best 7-drop. So,
I can play Nicol Bolas. I could. I can stick him in here. I've got every color of her white. I can fit those in too. Splash Sun in the sideboard.
My favorite thing about this deck is that you're not playing Elvish Rejuvenator.
Okay, so you don't like that card.
90% sure that card's not playable.
All right, well, let's talk about that a little bit, because that's a card I'm interested in. I just did not get to talk about it earlier.
So my problem with that card is that the success case is most of the time going to be Grow from the Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get a 1-1 body that maybe chump blocks, which is... It's pretty great if it does chump block, and it hits, like, a land rate. Like, and sometimes, obviously, it's going to hit, like... you know, the best land on the deck. Sometimes it's going to be Scavenger Grounds or like Hash Up Oasis, and it's going to be great, right?
Mm-hmm.
My problem is in the, I think we had some math on it before, and it was like, was it like 90% in a,
I think you're about 13% to fail.
Sure. But so my problem with this versus the Antiquities War, because we were talking about both of these cards are about 13% to fail. And the problem that I have with this card is that if it fails, you probably lose the game because of it about half the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that means you're losing 1 out of 20 games just because your Elvish Rejuvenator didn't hit a land.
Gotcha.
Okay, so actually with 26 lands, you're only about 6% to fail. But
sure. I mean, even then, though, that's still, like, I certainly don't want my matches riding on something like that.
That's fair.
I say as I, like, you know, play Hollow One, like, all the time, but...
Yeah, that is funny.
That feels like more controlled variance, though. This is just, like, literally if the top 5 cards of your deck are not lands, you just lose.
Mm-hmm. That's a fair critique. Michael, do you agree with that before?
Yeah, I think, like, the combination of that and Goblin Chainwhirler being a card and then something like Snake being able to Ballista it down, like... I think you're going to get to block with it less than you want, and anytime you don't block with it, it's definitely worse than any of the other ramp spells. And even if you do block with it, I'm not convinced it's better than Gift of Paradise or Spring of Mind.
Hmm.
Because it doesn't fix your mana.
It does grab deserts, which always. you need for
so
hour.
So it does get deserts, but you only need one in play. So if you play, you need one in play to get to the three, right?
Yeah, like, correct.
I have basically never seen Hour of Promise unable to get zombies.
Yeah, it is very rare.
I think if close to half your lands are deserts, that's just like not a thing that happens very much. So it gets deserts, but it doesn't always get you the colors you need. So I'm kind of wary of playing, like, Chandra and Hour of Devastation, or, like, I don't want to play a bunch of double-colored spells with my non-selective, like, my non-color-fixing ramp spell.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think it's just pretty unlikely in these decks where, really, like, all the deserts are pretty close to replacement level. New Rivulet and Hash Up Oasis are nice in that they say they're deserts, so they make sure your Hour of Promise is going to work. But I don't think that, like...
Their abilities don't necessarily do anything.
Scavenger Grounds is the yeah. only one with an ability that, like, actually does anything. So, I think the color fixing is going to be more valuable most of the time. And I think that that's usually going to make Spring to Mind or Gift of Paradise just better. Especially when you factor in that, like, your opponent is, with, you know, a decent amount of regularity, going to have, like, some combination of Ballista, Onkrom Crasher, Earthshaker, Kenra, or Goblin Chainwiller to invalidate your...
That's reasonable. Maybe Elvish Rejuvenator gets a lot better when we hit rotation. Actually, I think we lose... I guess we have Iden Grove from the Ashes, will be our only ramp once we rotate. But I do like that card, and I do think, like you talked about it, it'd be like, what, 6 in 100 games? I think... you will get to hit off it enough that you're okay with that small amount of variance. And I think a lot of it is being okay with playing ramp decks, knowing that these kind of things happen sometimes, and it's just part of accepting and sleeving it up. And I do agree that, like, Ballista and Chainwhirler do invalidate it a little bit, but I don't know, I feel like you don't play against them all the time. I don't disagree on principle.
It doesn't block a Glint Sleep Siphoner either. Like, I mean, there are...
What I'm saying, though, that the issue isn't... It's that when you start adding all these things up,
mm-hmm.
like, I'm just not convinced that a 1-1 body and the ability to sometimes get a desert when you almost never need one is better than just always getting what you want. And that's discounting that both of our other 3-mana ramp spells have always effects, right? Like... you always get the backside of Spring to Mind if you want it. You always get 3 life off of Gift of Paradise.
Well, we're being told in chat by Spencer, hi Spencer, that Gift is an M19, so we will have that when we rotate. And that's reasonable, what you said there, Michael, not trying to move it off that point. I do think the last thing I'll say is that you have to play basics like a lot of basics when you have Spring to Mind in your deck as the ramp spell over Elf, for example. Gift of Paradise doesn't have that problem, but that is sometimes a liability right now when you're trying to play these multicolor ramp decks. When you're like Spencer's deck and my deck are both playing four colors, so it's hard to fit enough basics to make those cards fit at times. So that is one of the upsides. Yeah,
that's a valid point.
Yeah,
there's some downside there, but I just wonder about that. Like, you know, play with the creature a bit and tell me how it feels when you miss a land.
I'm going to. It's going to feel bad. Then I'm also going to tell you how it feels when I don't miss a land and I still can't do good stuff. I'm going to be honest with you. Don't worry. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lead you down the wrong road.
Yeah, welcome to the actual secret. You cast it, hit a land, cast Our Promise, and your opponent still kills you.
No! Wrong. I played Sifter Worm. I scryed two lands to the bottom, revealed Commit to Memory, gained all the life, and they died 20 turns later. Perfect. Just good deck building. That's all I know how to do.
Revealed Commit to Memory, then committed my own Sifter Worm to increase the density of worms in my deck before casting Memory.
Correct. I committed, and then I hit, like, you know, what's another good one? Consign Oblivion? That's seven life. Boom. Then I block, consign my Sifter Worm, play it again. Scry three.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Flashback Mind Rot. Got him.
Yep, exactly. This is why Palaka Worm dying, by the way, matters there, Matt. Because otherwise I'd be consigned to living my Palaka Worms all the time.
Right, yeah.
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 Think about all the card advantage through cards in your graveyard.
It's basically ancestral. But that's going to be it for the Training Grounds this week. What did you guys learn this week from the Training Grounds? We'll start with you, Michael.
I learned that Mason has never cast an Ancestral Recall.
Would you like to know a fun story? I have passed sure. Ancestral Recall to take a Thalia in Vintage Cube more than once.
You what? You did what?
I passed Ancestral Recall.
Oh, in favor of Thalia in Vintage Cube?
Correct.
Oh, sure. I mean, if you're trying to win, that's fine.
If you're trying to have a good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I only play green, white, and cube, by the way. I don't know if you knew that about me, Kling. I think Michael knew that.
You play green, white?
Oh, yeah, man. Only green white.
You were thinking mono white. That seems wrong. You should play only mono white. That's the value maximizing play.
Well, this time on the Vintage League, everyone has the Vintage Cube. Sorry, everyone has the mono green Stompy deck in their sights. Well, not the ramp deck. My bad. And so I never get elves. So I never get to play the green white deck the way I like to, with like ramping out into Sweet Angel. So I've had to play mono white. It's been miserable. But History of Analia plus Sun Titan is sweet. That's what I learned.
You're playing the bad mono white deck, man. What are you doing?
I got like four trophies. Get out of here. Get out of here.
Four trophies in cube?
Like four trophies.
I've drafted like five times.
Yeah. We got like five trophies in like, you know, 3 or 4 hours or whatever.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Oh.
It really was. It was in one night for sure. All right. Like,
I'll believe a night, but 3 or 4 hours, I don't believe it. That's like
it was probably like, you know, a 7-hour night or whatever.
All right. All right. Surprise, Matt and Michael are better than me at Magic, in case you didn't know after the Worm deck.
The Worm deck is great, but it does kind of look like a cube deck.
Oh, it's sweet. It just seems like such a fun deck. Like, I'm definitely going to play that deck like at an FNM or something at some point. Like, that deck...
Also, you misspelled my name on Twitch. That's nice.
That has been up there for literally months, Michael, yeah, so you've never looked...
I never look at it.
Well, I'm glad to know that you're watching tonight. That's always good to know. I'll fix your name here in a second. But, Matt, what did you learn while I fixed Michael's name? Because that's what I learned.
You learned how to spell Michael's name?
Correct.
Not really. I've seen Mason spell my last name.
Yeah, well, I just... Because Hinderocker's... I mean, let's just be real for a second. Hinderocker is a better name than Michael. I said it. Deal with it.
No, but you can't spell my last name.
It's hard. I'm not a good speller. Like... All right, keep going, Matt.
I wouldn't necessarily say that I just learned this, but it is something that I would like to highlight, which is that there's a lot of value in looking at deck lists, even when you know they're bad, just like flesh out ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly something that I think that we did today. I think that most or all of these deck lists are just actually unplayable or close to it, but they did have some interesting ideas, and being able to talk to you guys about it was helpful.
Yeah,
I think sort of hearing, like, what made you think about this, or, like, what is the best interaction in this deck? Like, just things like that are kind of useful, even if the decks themselves are pretty bad.
Right.
Yeah, it gets you going, right? It can lead down a path. And, like, worst case scenario, right? Like, I don't know how long you guys spent, but I didn't spend a terribly long time working on it. So, like, you can get through a lot of ideas pretty quickly.
Well, so I brewed up an entire other deck and then realized that I didn't know how to read magic cards, apparently. Because I thought that Arcades or whatever, the Elder Dragon, was just, like, adorned the Siege Tower that also drew you cards every time you played at a creature with Defender.
Oh, okay.
And it's not that at all. Man, I had some sweet ideas with, like, Surge Mare, which is the blue 05. I was like, man, this is so broken. But it's not good at all.
That would have been so good if you hadn't caught it. We're on the show and get to it. It's like, so why is this your deck? That would have been a really great always improvement.
Yeah, I had the 2/5/2, it's one colorless green for a 2/5 that if your opponent activates an ability of a land or a creature that's not a mana ability, it does something. It's a draw card, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind it was a 3-mana 5/5, so it was like really good.
All right.
I thought Looping Prototype was in Standard for a minute, and I was really excited about my Goreclaw Looping Prototype brew.
Yeah, so that makes a lot more sense now. Okay, because when you messaged me if Looping Prototype was in Standard, I'd be all about this. And I was like, is that just a card Michael like always tried to make work, and now it's not the time?
I don't know, but it was going to be insane with Goreclaw and Galta. I was just going to go like, I don't know, Mana Dork, Goreclaw, Looping, Galta, untap 40 you.
So Looping Prototype is a what? It's a 4/5 for 2?
5/5, 2-mana, colorless, 5/5 that can't attack unless one player is hellbent.
Okay, so we can play this card. So I guess that doesn't count, right? Does the cost reduction? Yeah, it would work, right?
Yeah.
The 5/6 that cost there that you can only cast with creature mana.
Yeah, you could play 4 Looping Prototype and 4 Mirror Superior.
Yeah, I get it. And then you play a Gorecaller, and then you just like vomit your hand, and then they die. It's like the new Affinity.
Yeah, it's like Hollow One. Hollow One and Affinity had a baby.
Yeah, I gotta cut this part of the show. That way, people don't know.
All right. Oh man,
part deck. Hey, you don't want us to spoil PV's Pro Tour deck. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. The Goreclaw deck's overpowered. Dude, when they're playing Goreclaw in Standard, Modern, and maybe Legacy, whoo-wee, you know they've got a good deck. No, but I kind of agree with what Matt said. I learned that kind of stuff, and I learned that I had Michael's name misspelled on screen. I thought it was right. So there you go. We learned a lot tonight. It was good to talk to you guys about that. It was very interesting to hear your thoughts on Elvish Rejuvenator and all the other cards we talked about. But let's move on to hashtag would that be good? I'm really tired. I'm sorry, guys. I'm doing a lot tonight. While I pull this up, remember you can always support us at patreon.com/ccmtg. All right, Honest Bob here tweets, I saw this when I lived in Utah. Oh, no, sorry, this is the root beer pizza thing. We did that last week, didn't we? We talked about root beer pizza?
Yes, we did talk about that. Whether that was like a thing that was considered a combination or just something that, you know, you sometimes eat together.
We recorded on Tuesday last week. That's why I messed up there. All right. So Spencer tweets, hashtag would that be good? Should have 1 week a month where you ask Michael Hinderacher a flavor judge question so he can keep his platinum status as said judge. Michael?
Sure, you ready for a judge? Ask me some flavor questions. Let's go.
All right. Does Sandworm Convergence count as a worm from my 7-worm, 7-mana? So I can't
play that one's
it.
Easy.
But it ruins your deck because you now have 8.
So do I have to cut up?
You can just side one out. Yeah, you have to side one of the worms out when you bring in Sandworm Convergence.
So, keep it in, and you can say 7 CMC, 7 worms plus an 8 CMC worm. It actually doesn't break your flavor. Approved.
I like it. And is it, here's the ultimate thing. Is it a Tremors deck if I'm, because I'm going to put Unsummon in my deck now that we've gone deep on Consigned Oblivion. I'm putting them all in there with Sifter Worm. Does that make it a true Tremors deck? I'm just making worms pop out every turn? Have you seen the movie Tremors? What? Have you seen the movie Tremors?
No.
Okay, so there's this movie from like...
Never seen Tremors?
Yeah.
They made like 15 of them.
There's so many. It's like these worms under this town, and they like come up and eat people, and then like they go back down. So that's what my Sifter Worm's doing. It comes up, gets some light, eating creature in combat, and then goes back down.
Then it retreats. Yeah. It retreats, and then it comes away. It comes back with... Yeah, that sounds a lot like a movie.
There you go. So Spencer tweets a story in 3 pictures, hashtag, I'm sorry, with @MasonClark, @Nikachu, and CCMTG, MTG hashtag would that be good. And it's, basically that I'm going to be playing Nikachu in, some matches we're going to put up to YouTube. More details to come about that soon. We're still trying to figure out time to do everything, but I'm going to battle Nikachu for the title of Fusion Gaming Representative. Spencer said we need our best player to go battle Nikachu. Everyone else was busy, so I had to go do it. Vin tweets, hashtag would that be good? And it's talking about Brian Carey's tweet of hashtag MTG Nationals this weekend with the boys at First FNM and at Benjamin Vasco, which is him. There you go. Would that be good, guys, going to Nationals with your friends?
Sounds like a good time.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think Brian also got like top 16.
Seems so, even better.
Yep. Until qualified for the PT the weekend before that, so happened in time for them. Josh Kohler tweets, player meeting about to start, submitted my list now, just now, 1-0, let's do this. At DWC Podcast 1, hashtag would that be good, hashtag MTG Nationals. First off, Josh, good job getting us to promote your podcast on your hashtag would that be good. I fell for it. Second off, he's playing a tokens deck. I'm all about it. Michael, you were off Hidden Stockpile a year ago before Whirly Boy. What about now? Are you back in?
Sure. I mean, you don't seem excited. I appreciate just ignoring that it exists and going for it.
Yeah. Well, they can
attack. Like, it's a theme deck.
Yeah. Well, you set them up. They clear your board, and then you play Anointer Priest. You stack your map. You gain some life, and then it's over. They don't have Eldrazi Displacer on Chain Whirler. Can't do it forever, man.
Eldrazi Displacer Chain Whirler. Man, that sounds so...
Combo
that sounds like a beating.
Boom. Yeah, take that one to your modern.
I don't know how the mana in that deck's going to work, but I'm going to make it happen.
When the modern brew week comes, I know. Spencer.
I'm just going to play some Aether Hubs in my mono red.
We just have to play like 20, whatever the red white pain land is. I forget what it's called now.
Sure. 4 Battlefield Forge, 4 Aether Hub, and some Gemstone Cavern. Ship it.
Yeah.
Boom. And Eldrazi Temple, so we can play them quicker. That's just good deck building.
We play Tendo Icebridge. I think it taps. I think Tendo Icebridge might actually tap for colorless afterwards.
Sure, so does Aether Hub, right?
I'm into it.
Yeah, Aether Hub does, but I'm saying like instead of Gemstone Mine, we could play Tendo. Okay. Then we get the red, white, and colorless.
You can get all that from our sponsor at Oasis Games and use code CCMTG at checkout. Spencer tweets,
if you buy that deck, I will sign any card in it you want.
Boom.
Wow. Why are you damaging their cards before you send it?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sorry. Speaking of which, we have the greatest card in stock right now, which is a heavy play Kirkland Ironworks, which is only heavy play because Matt proxied Hallowed Fountain onto the front of it.
You don't know that was me just because it looks like my handwriting.
It's definitely your handwriting.
Alex just assumes that everything is me whenever it has something written on it.
No. That one definitely is your handwriting. It also probably was years ago when that was, you know, a fine thing to do.
Right.
Oh, man. How much is it damaged?
It's very enjoyable.
Do you know?
It's not damaged. It's heavy play.
I'm sorry.
It's sleeve playable. I'm planning on playing that for Clown.
How much is KCI near mint? How much could they possibly be?
$20.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one printing uncommon, a set that never got opened.
Alright.
Yep.
Well, it's going to be in the next master set. I don't know why anybody's wasting their money on it.
Because
you
want to
win before it gets banned.
Sure. There are only two options, though. It either gets banned or it's in the next master set, so just saying.
Sure, so you got to win with it now. That's the secret.
Yeah, exactly. Boom. Alright. We're finally getting to Spencer's tweet. This is the moment. Spencer tweets, this is how I feel right now at, here we go, CK Podcast MTG, LTO MTG, CC MTG, at Mason Clark, at Magic Mike MTG, at The Witchling, at DJ Cathro, at Soltakai, at Lobber T8, at Magic Nets, and at B Clarky CK, hashtag MTG, hashtag always improving, hashtag would that be good. It's a screenshot, and so now I got to read this. Spencer tweeted.
Screenshot of a Facebook post. This feels like such a tweet.
We're going as deep as we can right now. Just finished the last episode of Common Knowledge MTG, and he just means the latest, by the way. I thought they were done when I first read that. I was like, what? But he just means the latest episode. I can't express how excited I am about the future of our network. At Brandon Clarkey has improved so much as a host. Please continue to give him feedback. Nicholas Lassen, started this week with the new host of Limited Time Only with Nick Sals and Danny Cathro. I have fully dedicated myself to the host role on Constructive Criticism, allowing Michael and Matt Clinton to take the reins as I become a father and a brewer. By the way, me being the host and reading that is a little bit ironic. I find it funny, but you're six, Spencer. We're just giving you a hard time there, buddy. We love you. And then I'm so lucky to have Mason Clark and Sean Stokes in my life to help me grow the Heezing Game Media brand. I want to create a network dedicated to constant improvement and great quality, and these people mean the world to me for doing that. There you go. We love you, Spencer. Feel better, buddy. All right. Josh Kohler tweets, this happened. Hashtag, would that be good? And it is a draft deck that is every color but... Oh, no, sorry. It's Jund. My bad. I thought it was blue for a second, too.
Every color but two of them.
60% of the colors. That's like the Elvish Rejuvenator miss rate. Oh, Jerry Ballard. All right, this deck looks sweet. And three Fire with Fires is hot. So there we go. Oh, and two Squeeze. Wait, this deck's more ridiculous as I look at it. A lot of weird things happening here. Michael, as a flavor judge...
It's good.
Well, it's definitely not a flavor judge win, right? Because Squeak can never die.
Yeah. Well, he's so immortal, there are two of them. I wish I had, like, Flame of Keld, so that... I saw a guy at the Pro Tour playing a draft deck with, like, triple Keldon Warcaller and triple Flame of Keld, and it was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I played against a deck similar to that online, on Magic Online, and it was so powerful when he was, like, you know, play my Flame of Keld and then discard zero cards and then attack with my Warcaller and then draw two, and I was like, oh man, I'm just like dead to this like right now.
Better than that, it popped immediately. And
well, sure. I mean, if you have two of them in play,
I was watching Aaron play, and he went from like I couldn't imagine how he could lose to his opponent top deck Flame of Keld, and it's like if his opponent hits Radiating Lightning, Aaron takes like 40.
That's awesome.
It was really cool, but yeah, 306 throwing a draft in Nationals is sweet, and this deck does look really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the second tweet.
Three Fight with Fires team is mostly insane.
Yep.
And I mean, there's a Gichu Chronicler, and like this deck can go long real, real well. This deck is just insanely grindy.
And Jaya Ballard lets you get to the...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Double Squee as well is pretty... You're in for the long haul.
Yeah, this deck looks great.
Spencer tweets, dear patrons of CCMTG, just time to ask your questions for July and August, and there's a link to it, hashtag would that be good. If you're a patron of $5 or more, you get to ask a question. We didn't have one for this week, but that's why we skipped it. If you do have a question, we will answer it at the beginning of the show. There's also a quiz, which I don't think Spencer tweeted out. I'm sorry, a survey, where Spencer asked some questions about the show. So if you want to answer that, feel free to. It took like 2 or 3 minutes, I think. It's only like five questions.
It's a quiz, so if you get the answers wrong...
Michael will not sign your KCS.
You're going to be graded on this, so...
Yep.
Yeah, you actually fail as a listener. It's, you know, it's pretty disappointing, gut-wrenching stuff.
Yep. Ben Vasco tweets, proud of my boy, and then I believe it, yeah, it's Brian, for his top 16 finish at MTG Nationals. Also quite pleased with my top 64 finish, getting my first cash ever. Hashtag would that be good. I think that's the definition of hashtag would that be good, getting your first cash ever.
That is awesome. Yeah,
sounds great.
Spencer tweets, I challenge all the LTOMTG and CCMTG listeners to do this if they can. Hashtag would that be good, hashtag always improving. Talking to my wife about doing it, but I just started learning code and might not have time. And this is a tweet from my mom, Chantel, who tweeted, okay, I need to get better at limited and stop making excuses. So tomorrow I start hashtag 100 days of draft, time to spew some money. So Chantel, I'm going to try to, I don't know if I can consistently do it, but Chantel, Caroline, a lot of people are drafting every day for the next 100 days to help get better at limited. So there you go. And Watsy was happy.
Yeah, exactly. Wizards of the Coast retweets, Magic Online retweets, PayPal
retweets. Yeah.
PayPal retweets.
Everyone's so happy.
Processing.
Definitely. And I'm frozen when I'm smiling right now, but we're just going to finish out till the end of the show here because we're close. Scott tweets, hot take, cats being low maintenance dogs makes them strictly better. Hashtag would that be good? That's a terrible hot take. Cats are terrible.
I mean, I like cats and I don't really like dogs, so.
All right. Well, I'm glad I misspelled your name.
But it's not because they're low maintenance dogs.
Why is it you like them better?
I don't really like either. I become allergic to cats in my old age. Things.
Dogs are too exciting, too excitable. I need something more moody and kind of passive. So that it fits my personality a lot better.
That's what I was thinking.
I like all animals when they're not mine, when I can like leave them and then don't have to do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. I like going over to other people's houses and seeing their pets and then just, you know, not having to take care of them.
All right, Matt, which would you rather have if you have to have one? A fish? You have to have one. Just no getting around this. You have to have a fish. Or you have to have a snake. They're both incredibly low maintenance.
I've had both in my life.
Yeah.
Probably a fish, because honestly, like, feeding a snake is kind of a pain.
Okay. I never fed a snake before.
I used to have, like, a ball python for, like, a long time, and, like, the problem is, like, I don't like feeding them frozen things, and, like, trying to feed them live mice is, like, actually a real pain, and, like, they can hurt themselves, so you gotta, like, make sure they don't.
It's so much work. I thought you just dropped the mice.
It's actually kind of, it's actually difficult.
There you go. Michael, would you have picked the fish?
I don't want either.
Incorrect answer to a question.
Pick that the fish and then cook it for dinner.
Yeah, there you go. Josh Culler tweets, at Mason Clark, when are we getting that All About That bass rendition as a sting on at CCMTG? I heard it's amazing. Hashtag, would that be good? Moving on. I did karaoke in Vegas. I am not musically inclined, as you might expect, and I did All About That bass, and it's recorded. And
great.
I haven't listened to it since then, but I remember being on stage thinking,
probably a good call.
Yeah, I remember thinking, this is really, really bad, and then everyone was laughing at me, and then the next day I came into the event hall, and people were watching it, and they laughed when they saw me. So it was high school all over again. Spencer Allen tweets, this is funny on so many levels, in case you don't get it. One, wrong Silver at Mike Silver. Two, wrong Adam. And three, not a trade. Spencer, as you're messaging the Facebook group, I also have it. I can just send it. Hashtag, would that be good? And it's Michael Silver saying, Travis is right. I hereby excuse my absolute power and shall veto that trade. I don't know. This is a sports thing. I assume it's something about LeBron. Did anyone help me?
No, it's about DeMarcus Cousins. But it also wasn't a trade. So I don't know why Spencer tweeted this with, would that be good? But I'm not, mostly because I don't want to get into this.
Okay. Well, there you go, Spencer.
It's going to take too long to explain for it to be, it's not going to be remotely interesting to anyone who doesn't
I'm
already.
I'm already off it, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Seconded.
At Scott Prowski tweets, at Spencer the Teenage, how much would I have to donate the cast to have you eat a pineapple pizza on stream? Hashtag, would that be good? I think it was Scott who did it, but someone PayPal'd, yeah, this looks like Scott, was a guy who PayPal'd Spencer in Vegas $10 to have us order a pineapple pizza, and Devonair vetoed it because we had to go out on the strip, but I imagine $10 is probably enough.
Yeah, I feel like if you're donating a pizza to me, I'll eat it, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Matt, where do you fall on this pineapple and pizza? We haven't heard your stance on it.
I mean, I don't like pineapple on pizza, and I certainly wouldn't order it myself, but I'm not, you know, afflicted by it like so many people seem to be.
Yeah, I don't really like it, but it's not like I, you know, would avoid it if it was given to me.
Yeah, like
yeah,
if I gave you
if
free
it's
food.
For free, I mean, I'm willing to eat a lot of things for free.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't say anything. I wouldn't say anything.
A lot of things, yeah.
Lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I understand. Free food is good. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. We had a great time talking about these brews. We hope you enjoyed as much as we did. Send us feedback at CCMTG, at Spencer13H, or at Mason E. Clark so we can know what you think about the show, and we'll see you all next week.
See ya.